Hello, this is another Tavern of the Takeoff Warriors podcast. Welcome to the post-2015 Asian Cup Breakdown, where up is down, left is right, dogs and cats living together. What am I talking about? A very entertaining Asian Cup tournament has just ended. Japan and Iran crashes out, shockingly, the quarterfinals. Korea with its sights on the Asian Cup trophy. A 55-year drought about to end with a final showdown with host Australia, whom they beat in the group stage. By now, you know, Korea had a remarkable comeback in stoppage time, resilience shown with a Son Heung-min goal that electrified Korea and sent the game into extra time. But a defensive lapse and a goal conceded gutted their chances. They ran out of gas. And yet, that's not the end of the story. Ever since the disastrous 2014 World Cup, despite that loss at the finals last Saturday, Team Korea came home with a renewed sense of confidence and optimism, and supporters in agreement. Let's break this game and Korea's Asian Cup adventure in Australia with our Tavern writers. Jay Chi comes at us from Tavern Studio Busan. Tim Lee checking in at Tavern Studio Quebec. Jin-Suk Yang from Tavern Studio Connecticut. Steve Hahn, he's joining us later in the show. You know him as a sports writer for Korea Magazine and other various media outlets in the U.S. and in Korea. And I'm Roy Gim, a.k.a. the old tavern owner at the helm. Pleased to have you on board, listening from around the world. Let's talk about this. I mean, it's still, like, my heart is still racing several hours after the match has concluded. It was a heartbreaker, electrifying match in front of close to 80,000 people in Sydney, Australia. Let's get things started. Jay, kick things off for us here.
All right. There was a little bit of controversy in that game in that Uli Stielecki did make one, two really big changes to his starting 11. And also he made some slightly, on the face of it, unusual substitutions during the game. Mm-hmm. And so I guess let's just start generally what you thought of the final, his starting 11, his tactics, and his game management of it, or just any other thing that stood out to you in the finals. So
it was a 4-3-3 formation that he used, and it was a completely different, you know, aberration from his 4-2-3-1. Jang Hyun-soo coming in, normally playing as a center back, I think he played sort of defensive mid, if I recall, yeah. And then Park Ju-ho moved over to the wing. Those are some of the main changes to this, but, you know, it surprised a lot of people.
The day before, I guess the day of, I was watching a bunch of Korean news broadcasts, and I saw that there was a plan B, and this was the plan B they were talking about, a 4-2-3-1 with Jang Hyun-soo as a defensive mid and Park Ju-ho as the left winger. And I said, there's no way this is going to happen. Park Ju-ho, yeah. Oh, come on. Like, I just dismissed it. And then I remember distinctly, 2:40 a.m., I see that lineup. This happened. And I was so surprised. And I tried to reason to myself, why is this happening? And I just assumed that it was for defensive solidarity, right? As I mentioned in my match review that because we were held back and we were pegged back by Australia in the group stages, Stielecki wanted defensive solidarity, and he wants Park Ju-ho more back, Ki Sung-yeong more central, and Jang Hyun-soo to cover the chattery space that he often leaves behind. Turns out that Park Ju-ho was actually going to be an offensive left winger with Jang Hyun-soo just like roaming around, right? It really didn't work. So to me, Park Ju-ho's offensive output is very limited. When Park Ju-ho was a center mid and Ki Sung-yeong was a center mid and Kim Jin-soo was the left back, it worked out. There was chemistry. Park Ju-ho could cover for Kim Jin-soo. Kim Jin-soo could go up and down, no worries. Park Ju-ho had him covered.
Well, why don't we go into Stielecki's mind here? What was he? Additionally, what do you think he was contemplating? I mean, a better, brighter counter from Son Heung-min?
No, I don't think it was a better counter for Son Heung-min, because when you watch the team actually, the way it actually set out, it really looked to me kind of like a 4-4-1-1, because Son Heung-min was still dropping next to Ki Sung-yeong and Jang Hyun-soo to make this line of four when they defended. And he was dropping fairly deep, at least at the beginning. So I don't think he was really set on Son Heung-min to counter. I think my read on the 11 when I saw it was that he was looking for extra defense in the middle to keep Australia coming through the center, and also to add another aerial defensive presence in the middle. to help with any crosses that came in.
Why don't we deconstruct that? I mean, let's forget about the offense for just a hot minute. Defensively, did that work? Did we provide enough obstacles in the middle for Australia to be frustrated there?
I think so. We did manage to keep Australia at bay for a bit, but there was that one random that should never have happened moment. So the answer to the question is ultimately no, but it was working for a bit, defensively at least.
Like in the midfield, Australia couldn't do anything because we had enough numbers there.
Yeah, we pushed them to the flanks very hard, and they couldn't do much from that.
But it was really disappointing to concede at the end, because the first half, I guess, was boring offensively, but defensively, it was adequate. And then just to concede like that kind of made everything but useless the first 45 minutes. So. Okay.
Well, you've already, in fact, fast-forwarded to that very last part right before the halftime break. But most of the first half, Korea, I mean, I guess in general, looked like they had the better scoring opportunities, even though Korea didn't have the better ball possession rate. But we had the better scoring opportunities.
Yes, that is definitely true. And I think that's something that we have to take into consideration, because Australia's defense was actually pretty bad. Son Heung-min, they gave Son Heung-min so much space. Remember, he took three good shots, too.
Yeah.
I really think should have gone in.
There was that volley that it was difficult. Yeah. We could always say, why did he miss that? But it came close, and it's difficult to bring down a volley like that.
It was a fantastic chance, but I don't blame him for missing it, obviously. But if it went in, we could be talking about a completely different game right now.
Indeed.
So. Yeah, before the goal, Australia had one shot.
Yeah.
Just one shot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And it seemed like a tepid one at that, if I recall.
Well, it was Tim Cahill, right?
Yeah, Tim Cahill and Kim Jin-hyun easily saved it.
Like. Yeah, it was right at Kim Jin-hyun. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then I think the best scoring opportunity chance was when Cha took it upon himself. He was driving like he has been throughout this entire tournament. Made this fantastic run, cut in, tried to tee off to Sun. And it looked like he missed the shot initially, but it ended up that it was on
defender,
target, but it
got
deflected out.
Yeah,
for
I think
corner.
Luongo blocked it, and then he scored later.
Or Luongo blocked
it. Yeah, yeah,
Luongo, of course.
Goodness. And I guess, what can we make of this? Is this a center back, defensive lapse? Was Key sort of at fault here? I know it looked like in the replays he was trailing behind Luongo, or was it that Luongo was able to just execute?
I don't blame Key. Like, he should have marked him, but at the same time, Luongo took one touch, shot it. Like,
it was perfect. He really picked his corner. He got it. It was a very good shot. All against other teams, no player was able to do that against us, and they got their one chance and they scored, and other teams didn't. So,
Jay, what do you think of this?
The goal?
I mean, like in general, yeah, and the goal.
In general, I thought the first half was just sloppy.
It was sloppy.
I think both teams had chances. I mean, I know you talked about Son Heung-min's chances that he had, and yeah, he had the one that was blocked, and then he did have one or two other good ones, and it is what he tried, like difficult skills, like on the volley, one of them I think was, but and. No, I don't blame him for missing either, but you still, I mean, it's easy, I guess, as for fans to say this, but I mean, it's still one of those that you'd say for a player of his talent and that he probably should have at least gotten on target. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the goal, I can't, maybe it's just because while we're recording this, it's 6 a.m. here and I just woke up. But I can't remember exactly, but I do see like some people at least were saying that it was a little bit part of Kim Jin-hyun's fault because he screwed the clearance. It was like a back pass or something, and he kind of sliced it out, and it wasn't
very clean. Yeah. So Kim Jin-hyun kicked it out, and then they had a throw in which went straight to Luongo. And Luongo took one turn, one touch, shoot, goal.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like Korea's defending on it, I guess it's not really. It's a little harsh to say it's Kim Jin-hyun's fault, but. It was probably, it was a wonderful touch by Luongo and pretty much a perfect finish. So I think it'd be a little harsh to
single out any one player as at fault for that.
I almost view Luongo as, you know, that their diamond in the rough. You know, he plays for the third tier Swindon Town in the English Football League. And you know, people were just surprised on Australia's side that he was able to execute something like that. It just, people were talking about this coming out of nowhere kind of thing.
Even Postecoglou didn't expect Luongo to start that many games this Asian Cup, but he was very good for them and surprised everyone. And, yeah.
I keep getting this feeling, though, that if Park Ji-ho was in the middle, we could have blocked it. I think we would have had a lot more middle control had Park Ji-ho been there.
Jang Hyun-soo was trying to do, you know, both things in the middle, but it seemed like, I don't know, just like he was lacking. Yeah, he struggled there, right?
He's not Park Ji-ho. Like, his skill sets are very different.
Yeah. But I didn't see the need to change our formation that much before the finals.
It was a bad idea. It was a very bad idea.
I mean, I understand Stoica's logic behind it, but it was a risky move that he didn't need to take in the finals. There was no need to shake things up. I like Chang Hyun-soo as our 75th minute defensive sub when we are winning by a goal. That makes sense for him. But to start
on
a game,
top of that, like, Australia's worst player in the first half, I think, was Franić. And Franić is the guy that we were supposed to be targeting with Sonomi in the first place. That's what I was really looking forward to this game, and that didn't happen. So
plus he was like half injured. So
exactly.
Well,
can I ask?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, can I ask one thing? That's I know we've talked about it before on other posts and podcasts, but what is it that Korea national team coaches see in Jang Hyun-soo that keeps making them want to stick him as a defensive midfielder? When he already had also Hankook Young on the bench as a more natural holding midfielder, or even Im Young-ju also.
That's a mystery to me.
Why is... Because I think he's at least... Cause I know Hong Myung-bo did it. I'm pretty sure Choi Kang-yi did it too.
Choi Kang-yi did it, yes.
So why... He doesn't do it, I'm pretty sure. He didn't do it for FC Tokyo. I don't think he does it for Guangzhou RNF either.
No, he doesn't.
So I just, why is he keep getting there for the national team? Is it just that the other defensive midfielders are so bad, or is it just they think he's kind of, again, another kind of diamond in the rough that could somehow just kind of click into this really good holding midfielder?
I don't think it's the first option because Park Ji-ho has been so good. It's probably more the second. I have no idea what goes through. Like, we don't see training, right? So we don't know what goes on.
It's a bit of a mystery.
It's a bit baffling, yeah, for sure.
The Asian games, he...
He was great as a center back.
As a center back, right?
That's a different story.
That's completely different.
Well, you know, the bottom line, you know, Korea, for the first time, not only conceded, they're behind, and it was... I mused on Twitter that it was going to be interesting to see how Korea would respond if that was the case. Korea scoring first in these other matches has been critical. Could Korea be resilient? So we move on to the second half, and that's where we're going to take our first break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Tavern of the Takeoff Warriors, our deconstruction of the Asia Cup finals. So stay tuned, and we'll be back. It was a little bit frustrating because I think if I could sum up the second half, it started turning into a very bizarro kind of
very
football
bizarre
world. I mean, it, the substitutions, the game management at this point, and I think, Jay, you might have a lot to help us illuminate. Towards the end, we had four center backs playing. Kwak Tae-hee playing as a striker. And, you know... I don't know that the experiment worked, but in stoppage time, just as I was about to have a heart attack, Ki Sung Young was able to find Son Heung-min, and he finished brilliantly. I don't know about you guys out there, but it was pure chaos and pandemonium here at the tavern as me and a Chingu actually was over, you know, that early in the morning, and we were in disbelief, celebrating, high-fiving, yelping, but at the same time, trying not to wake up the kids. It was a miracle we didn't wake up the kids. Just a brilliant moment. But in getting the goal, there might have been a trade-off, especially when you look at extra time, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't know. I kind of want to look at the crazy substitutions that started happening.
At halftime, I seriously expected Chidaka to bring on Igano for Changansu.
Yeah,
exactly. And make a 4-2-3-1. Yeah, and actually run with and actually use Igano's pace, well, not pace, but his energy really.
Sure.
To outwork Australia. And when we come out for the second half and I see the number 20 in the huddle, Changansu.
Exactly what I did. Yeah.
I'm kind of like, what is he doing there? Why is he still there? Why is Igano still on the bench? What's going on? And it took too long, and I was frustrated because Shika's first half gamble didn't work, and it didn't have to extend past the first half. We had to actually go and get that goal.
Yeah.
And I was really, really disappointed because that substitution came 17 minutes or so too late.
I don't know if at that point Kwok Tae-hee started playing as a defensive mid. I don't quite know.
It didn't
Kwok
change
Tae-hee
at that
up
point.
After, yeah.
It changed.
It was on the final sub when he brought
with Kim Ji Young.
Kim Ji Young came on for Lee Jung Hyuk. Was when he went up.
Yeah, that's when he went up.
That was a weird one.
I think Kwok Tae-hee's striker worked.
In theory, yeah, it did. Those last two, sort of, because both Kwok Tae-hee and Hong Kuk Young were involved in the goal for Korea because the long ball went up. Kwok Tae-hee won the header. It came to Hong Kuk Young, who passed it to Ki Sung Young, who then passed it to Son Heung-min. I mean, they're very odd substitutions on paper, but if you think about it, you see what he's doing to an extent. You see that the Hong Kuk Young sub freed up Ki Sung Young to push higher and add to the attack, and for what would have been another ineffective night for Nam Tae-hee. The second sub gave probably Korea's best aerial presence in Kwok Tae-hee a chance to go up and win the long balls that they were launching. You see what he's thinking, but it was a short-sighted kind of thing. It was like, we need the goal now, and then, you know, if we get it, then, you know, extra time, we'll have to just figure something out. Because that's really kind of the problem then, was that you had to leave Kwok Tae-hee up top for the 30 minutes of extra time. But I mean, this isn't like the first time I've seen managers, you know, put up, you know, central defenders as center forwards.
Interesting. I mean, so I guess then, did he manage the game well, or did he put himself into this box?
A little. I mean, I guess you'd have to say it wasn't managed very well because the extra time period was just a mess for Korea. But I mean, also, I think it also reflects a little bit about what we've talked about a lot before, and that's Korea's lack of depth, that has to be very creative, if you will, with how he uses players and how he gets what he needs. Because, like, I guess Lee Jung-hyuk was tired and he couldn't keep on. That's why he took him off, I suppose. But, I mean, that he couldn't put on another forward that could do that kind of job was probably a little revealing about Korea. But I also, sort of on that, I haven't been wildly impressed with Gilecki's subbing for the whole tournament.
Oh, no, yeah. It's
so I was wondering if anyone else felt that same way, that
I felt
he's a little bit lacking in that area.
Well, that being said, I felt the same way. Like, there have been some really weird subs, even the group stage. But at the same time, he has literally no depth to work with, right? It's kind of understandable.
Well, I'm wondering, because I can't remember, I don't know if any of you can, in the extra time game against Uzbekistan, did he only make two subs in that game, or did he bring that third one on, like, really late into the extra time?
Very late, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very late.
Okay. Because, like, that was something that struck me, is that I was wondering why he was holding on to that one for so long. And, I mean, I guess I thought at the time it was maybe he thought it would go to penalties, but...
But then...
I mean, Son Heung-min scored fairly early on, I think, in the first period. His first goal.
And I think, but against Iraq, I think, we had three yellow-carded players, including Park Ju-ho, who was getting a bit aggressive, and Ki Sung Young, and we didn't take either of them off until, like, the 89th minute, if I've got the right game here.
Yeah, that's it.
So then, if we, obviously, for those who tuned into the match, they saw Kim Jin-soo not being able to clear it. In fact, it looked like he had an opportunity to clear it, but a lot of people had the same analogy. He was trying to be too cute, do a trick move to do a back heel pass to, I don't know, still keep
somebody
possession in the back in order to, you know, distribute a little more cleanly. But it backfired in him. Everybody knows the rest of the story at that point. If you've seen that, a lot of people are going to be scapegoating Kim Jin-soo, but I think I'm going to make a guess that all the Tavern writers would agree with me. Kim Jin-soo had an absolute hell of a tournament. He was a beast, and 90, other than that one huge glaring mistake, he was one of the factors why Korea was able to go so far into the tournament, do as well as they did, despite all the injuries and other problems that had happened to the KNT.
And it's so unfair on Kim Jin-soo because he's played every single second of South Korea's Asian Cup tournament. Every single second. The only other player who did that, I think, was Ki Sang-yong. So it's really, really tough for him to have to be the one that makes that big mistake to lose the game.
Exactly. And he was very unlucky to get it punished. Like, usually you can do that and it goes unpunished, right? It's all luck. But at the same time, like, you really can't be mad at Kim Jin-soo. Like, not just because of his past performances, but because he was probably the most distraught player on the pitch. Like, after the pitch, like, on the interview, like, I was in shock. Like, he knew that one moment, like, I have a quote in Korean, but I'll just link the thing anyway. But, he knows he'll never make that mistake again. He knows that he says it's the worst thing he's ever done in his life. Like, he knows
It's so frustrating because, I mean, frustrating in the sense that he didn't deserve it. He didn't deserve to be the person whose name goes up in the headlines. He made a mistake that cost us the Asian Cup, or cost us the chance to go to penalties to win the Asian Cup.
Right.
And I'm copying what Jin-seok said again, but I was going to say this too. After the goal, he was on the ground. He couldn't believe what he just did. Yeah. He was so distraught. And I really hope he doesn't beat himself up over this, because he had a great tournament. He has to keep on performing well for Hoffenheim, because if Yoon Suk-young stay on the bench again, as it seems to be the case.
Oh, he just fucked up versus Stoke.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. My bad. Well, anyways, he was one of our best players this Asian Cup, and he's only, what, 22? So he's got a few bright years ahead of him, so he needs to keep on going and not beat himself up over this. It wasn't solely his mistake.
Agreed. Hopefully, I think he will be able to recover his kibun, so to speak. I guess I don't know if there's anything that can indirectly tie Stielike to that last conceded goal, which was just unbelievable. But I think somebody mentioned this. Kwak Tae-hee was supposed to cover the...
Yes, Troisi. Troisi was supposed to have been caught.
Yeah, but he was tired too, obviously.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to the Tavern of the Takeoff Warriors. I just want to interrupt because we have joining us Steve Hahn. We're really psyched because I haven't made a public announcement about this on the Tavern blog yet, but he is joining us as a new contributing writer to the Tavern. So this is his... debut with the Tavern podcast. So, Steve, welcome aboard.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And for those who are not in the know, maybe have been living in a cave, Steve Hahn is an amazing journalist. He has covered Korean Hanguk Chugu for quite a while for Korea-M, and he's also writes for other publications, including Korean sports media. So, yeah, once again, we're just psyched to have you on board. You also stayed up late along with the rest of us in the United States. What was your take on the game?
Well, I mean, I thought it was one of their slightly better performances in this tournament in terms of the quality that they displayed. But you look at the grand scheme of things, and I think 70% pass completion rate is just – that's just not up to the standards, in my opinion. And They also got dispossessed well over 200 times, if I remember correctly. I looked at the stats for a brief moment. So execution of the game plan, I think it's safe to say that was pretty poor. But I think it's plausible that they showed enough grit to make the game interesting. But I'm of the opinion that within Asia at this level that they should be outplaying most of their opponents, but that didn't happen in this tournament, so that to me is a bit disappointing.
Yes.
Sorry, but that poor completion rate and the dispossession thing, that's kind of what happens when you change formations right before the finals. So.
It also happens because you just long ball over and over again.
That yeah, really of course.
They played pretty a lot more direct than I would have liked. But I guess when you're down and you've only got minutes, they feel they may not have much choice. Chaudhuri, his last game as an international player for Korea, that's another, I think, sort of tragedy if you can look at it from that negative point of view. He put on a hell of a display today, another stunning display. The only drawback was that, you know, he was, I think, the main driver in the extra time when they were searching for that equalizer. And then it became almost too predictable. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw it that the same way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think it's something that requires a lot of analysis. The team looked gassed. I mean, that was true at the end of the second half as well. And I just think they just ran out of legs. No one had it except for the old man. So
yeah,
but
so he was kind of it.
But that is like really incredible. He's got so much stamina to actually be playing that hard after 120 minutes. And I think I heard about this, like, after the game, he was crying, and I thought, that really
sucks. Half a team cried, dude.
I know, but it really sucks, because it's his last game in the TNT, and he has to lose the Asian Cup Finals. And Park Ji-sung and Yang-pyo also went out this way, losing to Japan. We won the third place game, but we still lost to Japan
in 2011.
In the finals,
yeah.
On penalties. It's really tough, because Chaudhuri deserves better, and it's really disappointing to see him go out like that. But that's not to say he's had. That's not to take away from the fact that he's had a fantastic career.
I get one more thing. I think an observation about Stilica's game management, running out of gas. Jay, you mentioned that, and yeah, I've sensed that in extra time, and you know that may have contributed to the mental error on Kim Jin-soo's part. Who knows? It's hard to say exactly, but I do know that Ki Sung-young didn't seem as on his game. And I don't want to harp on this guy because he is another one of those reasons why Korea went so far in this tournament. I mean, he was turning on masterclass performances after another, I thought, in the midfield. But I think he ran out of gas. And this is a guy that has played every single minute of this tournament. I mean, and I think speculating too much, but had Korea been able to really secure the group in a more convincing fashion, he might have been able to rest Ki, possibly during the Kuwait game. It's hard to say exactly.
I just have to say I have to head out. It's been great doing this podcast, but I've got to go. Sorry.
Okay, all good. Tim, thank you for joining us. We'll see you again sometime in the near future. So where were we? Ki Sung-young in particular, it's got to be running. You know, has to be on 100% for Korea to be effective. Should he have been rotated out at one of the group games in order for him to be, you know, 100% for today?
I don't really see when he had the chance to do it. I mean, even if you accept that the team really wanted to win the group, the only time really would have been Australia. Like, because if you take him out against Kuwait, I mean, you could make an argument maybe that he could come out like 20, 25 minutes earlier on Kuwait.
But there's the depth problem there, because I don't think that Stilica then trusts anybody else to come in as a defensive mid in his place.
True. Well, you'd have to do something like you saw against in the finals. You'd have to have some sort of like Hankook Young, Jang Hyun-soo, double pivot that's just uber defensive and just relying on just holding out for that 1-0 win rather than trying to control the game, which doesn't seem like the way he goes. So I don't know.
Yeah, and you also have to realize that he was fatigued coming into the tournament. I mean, he played every game for Swansea this season in the Premier League, if I remember correctly.
That's
and
right.
he was fatigued coming into the tournament to begin with. And
that festive season, yeah, you're absolutely right. That festive season, there was like what five games in a span of like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, he started all but one game and played every game. So,
I think it's definitely a factor. Not to mention, I don't want to make excuses for the Korean national team. And overall, I still think it was a positive. There's some positive momentum still to take away from this. But if we were to super overanalyze this finals game, Lee Chung-young, Koo Jae-chul, had they still been with us, not injured, not taken out, I think there's another factor. So I think hats off to Korea that in general, we were able to go farther than I would have anticipated when you factor in that those two were knocked out early. The Tavern of the Takeoff Warriors podcast will be right back after this brief musical interlude. I wonder, at this point, it behooves us to look forward into the future, because one, we have Cha Do-ri, who's going to be departing from the national team, as sad as that is. I guess people are wondering, do we have the right center back pairing? The most often used pair was Kwak Tae-hee and Kim Young-kwan eventually. It just ended up being that way. But he's tried out a lot of different center back pairings. I think we definitely got the left back secured up for the most part. The question marks that are out there are the center back pairings and the right back. Where do we go from this point for the Korean national team and build upon any kind of momentum we've got from this tournament?
I think as far as right backs, from what I understand, there really aren't that many competent right backs in the K-League right now. So it might have to come down to a situation where Stilike handpicks a player playing in other positions, maybe with the proper skill sets of a right back, perhaps a player with pace, passing, and some defensive capabilities as a midfielder or maybe central defender, and then maybe converting him into playing as a lateral defender, much like what Borussia Dortmund did with Kevin Groyskreuz last season in Bundesliga. But if I had to pick an available right back at this very moment, I'll probably go with Ojesuk, who's playing for Gamba Osaka in Japan right now.
Okay, that's an option. And he did play for Hong Myeongbo's 2012 Olympic team.
Right, he played in the knockout. He played in the knockout stages of the 2012 Olympics.
Jinsuk, you had an interesting choice, and it was the right back that scored the game-winning goal against North Korea for the Asian Games.
Yes, that's Im Tang-woo, and I think he will be playing first-team football with Ulsan Hyundai this season. So depending on how he does and depending on what Ojesuk does, yeah, those are the two players who are on the right back radar right now.
Do we think there's any chance that he'll go Kim Chang-soo again?
Just will be called up, I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but earlier in the tournament, he impressed me. He impressed me in the pre-Asian Cup warm-up with Saudi Arabia. He looked like he was adventurous going forward and relatively effective. And then for some reason, gradually throughout the tournament, I could see people were, you know, Key wasn't opting to use, you know, Kim Chang-soo as much. So he looked like he was wide open calling for the ball, and they kept attacking on the left. I guess maybe because Son Heung-min was up there, but you know, and Kim Jin-soo. So I think Kim Chang-soo, as long as he keeps developing in the J-League, he's still a viable option.
Well, Kim Chang-soo, I mean, the problem with him this year was that he didn't play a lot in the J-League. Yeah. He was always on the bench, and he didn't play a lot for Kashiwa Reysol, so I don't know if that's going to change next season for him. I wonder if Lee Young will make a re-showing
at
the national team, because he's also...
He's with Sangju Sangwoo, right?
Did he go? Yes, he did. Yeah, he went to his service this year.
Which he could get rusty in the K-League second tier, but he would get minutes.
Yeah, so you had, you know, Lee Jung-hyuk was there this year, who's at Sangju Sangwoo already, and of course, Kuno, when he was there, also got calls. So, it doesn't rule him out, it doesn't naturally rule him out just because he's at Sangju Sangwoo. I mean, there's just a lot of different ways on how Stilike wants to view his selections, if he wants to go younger or more experienced or more out of the box, so is in other things. Because, I mean, in theory, he could also maybe bring Hwang Seok-ho, who made a move, and I think, according to Takeuchi, one of our other writers, he'll probably be used as a right back in his new club at Kashima Antlers. So.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, that's so bad. Hwang Seok-ho is a very naturally gifted center back. That's such a waste of talent.
But now he's shifted to the right back for Kashima.
That's what Takeuchi seems to think is that, well, Japanese media, I think he's looking at, said that Kashima wants him as a right back, and he went really there, so.
Convert him that way. Okay. All right, well, I guess to be determined with a right back. Center back, well, I mean, pairings, what's the overall verdict in the Asian tournament? They didn't, interesting, I know, Jay, I heard you on Irish radio talking about this, that the jury might still be out, because even though up to this point they didn't concede any goals, which was, it seems like a good stat, it's very deceiving, because if you saw all those games, as we all did, that they were probably very lucky not to concede a goal, and probably in each of those matches.
Yeah, well, because they asked me about the clean sheet streak, the 5 clean sheets, and I said it was a bit deceiving because Australia in the group stage probably should have scored against us at least one.
Yeah.
And then Uzbekistan, I think, probably should have scored at least one against us as well.
Yeah.
So I just said that was a little misleading in terms of like just stats, pure stats go. But I mean, the Kwak Tae-hui Kim Young Kwang partnership was solid, but I don't think they were tested a whole lot. And so, I mean, going forward, it might be the one you use for a little while. But I mean, Kwak Tae-hui, we all know his limited skill sets and his issues with pace and off the ball movement and so on. So I don't, and he's 32,
he's getting there in age. Yeah, he's getting there in age.
So, I mean, I don't know how long you want to keep using him as a starter. Kim Young Kwang kind of got rid of the horrible errors that he traditionally makes once a game.
Yeah.
But I mean,
oh, but he still made one in today, but you know, it didn't.
Yeah,
it didn't,
he made
cost
one. It was a smaller error, but it wasn't. No. It didn't really cost the team. But I mean, against better opposition, maybe they pop back in again. He panics a little more. So, I mean, I don't think the center back pairing is set for the next World Cup. But I think you could probably stick with it, maybe for that. I think it's round 3 of World Cup qualifying against the smaller Asian teams. And then maybe you have to reevaluate after that.
Jinsuk, I remember hearing you comment about Hong Jong-ho at Augsburg. He's a bench player right now, but he did get on the starting 11 a couple of times the previous season for Augsburg. You think he's got a future?
I think he does have a future, Grant, if only if Klavan and Carlson Bracker leave. Even after, I mean, he's been decently good with Augsburg when he's playing, but like, as we saw, even though he did play like at the World Cup, he got wrecked, right? So like, I don't know. I think Hong Jong can develop into a good player. Maybe right now is not the time. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Steve,
it's too unpredictable.
Yeah, sure. Do you have any strong opinions one way or another about the center back pairings? Because there was a lot of different combinations used. Prior to, you know, in the tune-up matches and then throughout the Asia Cup.
I mean, I think overall, I agree with the rest of you guys in the sense that this Kim Young-won and Kwak Tae-hui partnership, it might be good enough for the time being, because Kwak Tae-hui, I mean, but with all due respect, though, he's excellent in the air, and I think he's at a decent tournament. But when he's up against the forward making runs behind him with the ball being played over the top, I've seen him get absolutely annihilated. And while he could also man-mark stagnant forwards like Cahill to perfection, like he played pretty good defense on Cahill last night, I thought. But I've seen him get punished by strikers with skills on the ball. So when you combine that with the fact that he's getting up there in age, I think his remaining time with the national team should be limited, to say the least. And I think Hong Jong-ho is actually a very good player. And you also have to remember that he played with injury at the World Cup last year. Played with an ankle injury. And I think when he's fully healthy, which is that's a big if, but because he hasn't been healthy for the last year or so. But when he's fully healthy, he's probably the best defender that Korea has.
If I can, I'm going to skip the midfield for just a moment, because it seems like there's some good things happening in the midfield. Obviously, Captain Ki Sung-young has been a stalwart, not only for the KNT, but also for Swansea. They are really missing him right now for these FA Cup. And, well, actually, they're out of the FA Cup. But the EPL ties, they're getting hammered without him. So they can't wait to get Ki back. But I'm going to skip the midfield, because there are some positive, a lot of positive things that we have going for him. Pak Ju-ho, possibly as the defensive, double pivot partner with Key, seem to have worked. Fast forward to the center forwards, because this is the problem that's been endemic. As much as we've spent some time with the center backs and the right back, Lee Jung-kyup was looked as a Cinderella-like story. In fact, I think Korea had dubbed him as the Gundarella, a turn of phrase that Kongolish that mixed that the fact that he's in the army and Cinderella. You get it. But I don't know about you guys. He's got raw talent, but there's that but that's lingering, and I want you guys to fill in the blank.
Well, he has raw talent in terms of like his physical skill set, I think. But for me is that he lacks kind of that football brain. And it's kind of whether he can learn kind of the little nuances of playing as a lone center forward.
Yeah.
Being able not just to be a target man that can, take the ball down or flick it on, but also then position yourself off the ball, how to make runs, how to manipulate defenses and move and so on. And so, it's been talked about on other things on the site, but I mean, it's kind of the problem with the way Korean football is set up. When he comes out of the army, he'll be 24, I think, because he still has another year.
Yeah.
And so, right. I mean, you're talking about a 24-year-old. I mean, how much is he going to really develop at that point, because that's when he should be entering, the prime years of his career.
That's right.
But he's still going to be fairly raw player at 24, I suspect. I don't know. For me, it's asking a big if you're going to trust on how much time you're going to invest on a 24-year-old player who's still very raw at the international.
Exactly. I think Lee Jung-kyup was very useful for this tournament. We won't have anybody, but when we have Ji Dong-won, Kim Shin-yuk, and Kim Sun-dae, those are our top choices. And within a year, Lee Seung-woo should be playing for Barcelona B. So
there's Ikeno. Both of these guys actually, at times in some of those group matches, played a very important part as far as Korea going forward into the tournament. But you saw those games in which Ikeno, the finishing like we've seen before. There's nothing new there. It was left desiring for quite a lot. He was left wanting it. I wonder out loud if just the years that he spent after he won the Asia Player of the Year in 2012, that his years in Sungju Sungmu spent in the Korea lower, the second division, relegated, just did too much damage. That he lost a lot of, like Jay says, that football-ness.
I think that's a little overblown, honestly.
You think so?
Yeah, I think he's been fine, to be honest. Like, he hasn't lost much.
But don't you think the touches were just a tad bit too heavy sometimes, though?
But I think he's always had that problem. He's
always heavy. Yeah.
Okay, so he still's got a role.
I mean, this is like my little thing about Ikeno is that he gets a lot of flack, and it's deserved to an extent. His touch is heavy. His finishing leaves a lot to be desired. But I think people are expecting things out of him that are not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's important to remember, he's not naturally a center forward. He was a wide midfielder, and it was really only just like in that year before when he won Asian Player of the Year that he was kind of converted into that kind of withdrawn secondary striker behind Kim Shin-wook for Ulsan. And I think, like, the one game, like, I think it was the Kuwait game. I mean, it was the one. No, it was Kuwait, I think. Is that he missed some chances and his finishing was poor, but I think he made some moves and he attempted some stuff that you don't normally see from our center forward set. And I think for me, that was the positive. He actually tried. He tried some of those kind of little more audacious shots and attempts that, and he put himself in positions to take them that other forwards don't do for us, that you didn't get from Lee Jung-kyup or you don't traditionally get from like Kim Shin-wook or you don't go kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Ikeno is a very, I think he'll remain a very valuable asset to the national team, but not mainly as a super sub. I think that's where he shines best.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. This is tantalizing. This prospect, Jay, you had a very interesting idea. And I think it was used a couple of times. I'm not 100% certain, but it looked like he was used at various times as a center forward, experimentally.
Oh, Sun Heung-min?
Yeah. And it, I think it seemed to work. He was the target man that then finished. I'm looking at the extra time in the quarterfinals against Uzbekistan. It looked like he was shifted centrally. Kim Jin-soo found him. Cha Du-ri found him. It worked. Am I wrong? Is that a good idea or a bad idea? Because I know there's some people were saying that he had a mixed performance in this tournament, even though he did score some vital goals.
Well, I mean, the thing about that frustrates, I think, with Sun Heung-min is that when you watch him, it looks like he's often doing a lot. He beats, you know, a defender or two. He gets these really kind of spectacular shots in.
Sure.
But he usually, you don't get anything, if you will, tangible out of him. He doesn't provide a lot of assists. And, I mean, he scored 3 goals here, but, I mean, they were very kind of poacher's goal, if you will. I mean, sure. the Australia goal was probably, I guess, the best one, if you will. He's a difficult player to kind of pin down for Korea because he clearly doesn't seem comfortable as, like, the one top center forward. He seems more comfortable on the wing or just behind. So it's just hard because you want him in a position where he can score, but you also have to kind of consider what he's capable of doing, what he feels comfortable doing.
Yes. So Sun Heung-min is a player that plays off of his teammates, I think. And we need a striker who can hold up the ball. If a striker can hold up the ball very well, Sun Heung-min plays very well.
That's the trick of it.
And I personally think that two top of Sun Heung-min and Lee Seung-woo would be absolutely perfect if things work out right. Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Bayer Leverkusen, you know, he sort of has that arrangement. The people around him can hold up the ball.
Yeah, he pretty much plays in the, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, he's a couple notches below him. But, I mean, the Ronaldo nickname is actually quite apt because he's very similar to how Ronaldo actually does play.
Definitely.
I mean, Ronaldo is not someone who can play as a lone center forward whenever they try it.
Right.
It's pretty poor because he's a player that runs into space and can combine with others, but not one that really creates on his own. And so that's, I think, the trick to getting the most out of Son is probably something similar, finding a center forward either like Benzema that wants to drop deeper and, you know, receive the ball then has the skill to turn and play those passes to him, or someone a little more just like a big kind of traditional nine like Kim Shin-wook, who can just hit it off, can just flick it on for him or head it down to him.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But I mean, I guess my bigger point though is that as a true like winger who drops back deep to defend is a waste of his ability to have him dropping deep to defend and wasting energy there. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Tavern of the Takeuk Warriors. I know it's not a football-related song, but Dan Deacon, everybody, who used to be from Baltimore, I think he lives in Brooklyn now, he's the guy who is in the background. So let's get back to the Tavern of the Takeuk Warriors podcast. I mean, we played against, I think another factor we didn't talk about was that, you know, we were in Australia. We were playing the host country. And even though we beat them in the group stage, you know, it's playing in front of 80,000, you know, it's a difficult thing. And I think Korea was booed every time they touched the balls, which is
every time.
Good Lord. No, you know, I think Takuchi was commenting, stay classy, Australia.
Well, it's not just they were booing when we touched. They were booing every time our players went down and got hurt, which was, I thought, a bit much. They booed when Kuja Cho got injured. They booed when Park Ji-ho got injured in the group stage. When players went down in this game, I think I remember Ikuno got kicked in the stomach by, I think, Yennak, who jumped into him or something. They booed him when he was down, and I mean, it was...
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, booing the opposition is fine. I mean, I get it. It's a sports thing. But, I mean, they were... The injury thing, I thought, was a little bit over the line.
Maybe they were cheering on, like, this is how they do it in, you know, rugby. Australian rules football. I don't know.
On Twitter, people were telling me they were doing it because they thought they were time-wasting. There was, like, one of those things where they were, like, faking that they were actually injured just to stop the game. But I don't know about that.
Is there anything that's outstandingly comes out at you about Korea's performance in the Asia Cup or in this particular finals?
Not really. I mean, I don't think the team was outstanding. They were solid, but I mean, they were solid, and that's an improvement in and of itself, because usually they look very disorganized and kind of they panicky. And so I think they made a step in this tournament, but it's a small step. And I think fans going forward can, you know, take heart that Stilike seems to have them going in the right direction, but they also need to be patient and not expect it to be, you know, don't expect miracles.
Yeah.
The team should qualify fine for the World Cup, but if we do these big friendlies against, you know, good South American teams or European teams, or maybe even some of the better, like Mexico or maybe the US, that maybe even Japan, that, you know, it might not look, there might be some big losses, there might be losses. And so, I mean, I guess my overthought for this tournament, it was solid, it was a step forward, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Yes, and that's exactly what Stilike said himself, too.
One thing that I wanted to talk about was, I think it's nice that they finally found a starting goalkeeper. Kim Jin-yeon, I think. I went back and checked some of his heat maps in some of the games in this tournament, and he covered the entire penalty box in each of those games, and which I think is really impressive, because there aren't many goalkeepers in the world who can do that. And his reflexes, I think, have been wonderful. But I think the next big asset that he has is his ability to really time his runs when he rushes out. I think he does that really well. But that being said, though, I think his pass completion rate, I think, was below 50% in this tournament, which is really abysmal for a goalkeeper. So that's something that he might work on going forward, because you need a goalkeeper who can play those build-up passes. So if he doesn't improve on that, I think his progress is going to stall. But it was nice to have a goalkeeper who can actually dictate things in the penalty box, I thought.
Yeah, I thought he had a solid tournament. It looked very, other than a few gaffes, a newer, like, maneuver that didn't pan out. Other than that, I mean, just some very fantastic saves to keep Korea in it.
I was just wondering, does anyone have any concerns about Kim Jin-hyun going down to J2 next year?
He really needs to transfer out, because he's not going to be doing very well in J2. That won't help him at all.
There were rumors that he was going to transfer to a K-League team, but I don't know.
I hope so.
No, he renewed with Sarrazel, so...
He did.
Yeah.
And so did Forlan, which I found that hard to believe.
Forlan still had a contract. It was, but he's supposed to go out. I think he'll still go out.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that is a concern. Yeah, he could lose a little bit of sharpness there. So that, and like Steve was saying, he needs to work on the distribution. He can work on the distribution with solid game minutes, but, you know, you'd want that in a top flight league, not in a relegated division. So did you feel we're making progress? Jay had a muted and probably, you know, he has good reason to have a muted response to any positives going forward. But do you find positives? You wrote something.
Yeah, there are definitely positives, as I wrote in the review. Like,
yeah,
with Kwak Tae-wee and Kim Young-won, it's very impressive to see them performing this well. At the same time, like, I know there's been a lot of luck. Like, we should have conceded multiple times over the course of the group stages, but we kept a clean sheet for 8 hours. That's very impressive. And I think mentally and keeping focus, Stilike has managed to get rid of those really dumb errors. Well, not really get rid of them, but, like, reduce the frequency of
them. Reduce them.
So, yeah, there's definitely cause for optimism, but at the same time, you know, like, the same problems are still manifesting themselves, just in a less severe manner, I guess.
We talked at length about the substitutions, the game management today, that, you know, may have been flawed, probably definitely was flawed. Overall, is he the right manager for Korea that we can develop and move forward with him under Štilica?
I think he's done a good job so far. I mean, with the limited time he's had, like, he's made some degree of improvement. So, yeah, going forward, I have optimism in Štilica, but he has to fix a lot of things.
It's telling that he was the youth developer for Germany within the last 10 years, and some of those players under his squads eventually, you know, were part of the World Cup Germany senior team. So that's what I'm hopeful. There's so much that's wrong with the K League, as particularly at the youth level. Yes. Jay Jinsa, we've talked about that at length. Hopefully we can, there's can be some meaningful reform so that the youth kids can get some meaningful professional minutes, perhaps even starting as early as 17, like they do in Europe.
And Japan.
Yes, in Japan, yes. And I think that should be something Korea's got to be
looking at. Oh, definitely. Shinji Kagawa has been playing for Cerezo since he was 16 years old, and he's had a ton of apps before he moved to Borussia Dortmund. That's huge for a young player's development. Yeah. And that's something that Korea does not offer.
Yet. That's the key word here, yet. Okay, let's go to the last call. Steve, you're up first.
I think from a qualitative standpoint, this team should get better when everyone's healthy. But, you know, the World Cup qualifiers, as always, will probably be a scramble because it's always been that way. But the team has enough class within Asia, at least, I think, to accomplish their goal, which is to qualify for the World Cup. So I'm not too concerned about them actually clinching their berth at the World Cup.
Okay. Jinsuk.
I think it's going to be a mix between the 2010 World Cup qualifying, where we went undefeated, and the 2014 World Cup qualifying, where we almost didn't qualify. I think we will qualify. We're definitely in a better shape compared to last time, right?
And this is your opportunity to talk about the Park Sung-ho, who just now is able to sign a contract with Barcelona.
Yes.
B.
I think
Lee Sung-woo, this generation that's training in Europe and it's looking really bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if they're going to play the World Cup qualifiers per se. I hope they can be introduced slowly, friendlies, you know, something like that.
So you're saying there's a chance. All right. And I think I've said enough as tavern owner. I always get to say too much. But let's give Jay Chi our final call.
I guess if I can maybe go on a slightly longer little spiel.
Go for it.
My only thought on Štilica is I think he's the right man for right now. I think his work with Germany's youth program hopefully is a good sign that he can do it with Korea. He seems to have the passion and the desire to make a bigger impact with Korean football. I do think he maybe, to use a scouting term, has a slightly limited ceiling as a senior manager.
Sure.
But I think he can get us back to where Korea was maybe like 2010. Around that kind of level again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to create any miracles and like be like suddenly turn Korea into this world power kind of thing. But I think he can get Korea to be a solid team. And hopefully after that, he will move into the administrative side of things with the youth programs, either with the KFA or possibly shifting over to the K League. Expectations of the team going forward. I think kind of like what Jinsuk said, it'll be a mix. I don't think it'll be quite like the 2010 qualifying was, but I think it won't be as bad as 2014 was either, at least hopefully not. So I'd expect the team to get through round three of qualifying without having to panic fire and hire like they did last time. And then I think round four, that final round, they should qualify for Russia. But hopefully not as heart attacky as this last one was.
That could be a measure of progress, wouldn't you say? If Korea were to qualify in a very solid and smooth fashion, as opposed to sort of running backwards into it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, yeah.
and the tavern producer is waving his hands. That must mean this podcast is at an end. I lied, however. I did want to add something to my last call. There's an extra silver lining to not winning the Asian Cup. 55-year drought be damned. There's still the bigger picture. Sure, there's improvement. The rehabilitation of their image is underway, but Korea is far from where they should be. Their football culture isn't fully developed. And one case in point, look at the nearly empty K-League stadiums. And on the pitch, Korea is not a top world-class power, not yet anyway. But had Korea won the cup, which they almost did, there's a danger that Koreans would not fully examine and deal with structural problems that are real and need absolute attention. But the way in which Korea conducted themselves in getting to the Asian Cup finals first, and in the game itself fighting to equalize, they earned the admiration of everyone, and they still go out with that rare stamp of public approval. That's a fine, delicate balance, giving Taekook Warrior supporters hope and optimism on one hand, and not give an undue false sense that everything is right with Korean football. That fire still burns to win back the Asian Cup, and hopefully that will keep Korea in motion, still continuing on, still fighting on, all in improving Hanguk Chugu. So there's going to be a super short extra podcast coming out soon. It will continue the neat conversation we had. We just couldn't fit it all in. But to preview it a bit, it includes a very special and fond farewell to Jay Chi, who is leaving the tavern. Don't miss it. We'll post it as soon as possible. From all of us at the tavern, Daehan Minguk and Doboja.